Karen took the longest, most luxurious shower of her life. There were no pinging pipes, no water that came and went, and suddenly turned cold. She used all of the expensive products, and when she came out, she felt brand new. She dried her hair, then wrapped herself in a thick, oversized white towel and returned to the bedroom. Angie was sitting on the edge of the bed. There was a pile of accessories around her. Hairbrushes and makeup, curling irons and handbags and wraps. I found a beaded black shawl and a black evening bag and this. She held up a beautiful pink and black butterfly hair clip. Come on, sit down. My sisters and I used to do each other's hair for hours. She tossed a pillow onto the floor in front of her. Lauren dutifully sat down, her back to the bed. Angie immediately started brushing her hair. It felt so good, Lauren actually sighed. She couldn't remember ever having her hair brushed. Even when her mother took the time to cut Lauren's hair, there was no brushing involved. Okay, Angie said after a while. Now, sit on the bed. Lauren changed positions. Angie knelt in front of her. Close your eyes. The whisper-soft touch of eyeshadow. A flicking of blush. I'm going to put some sparkle on your throat. I bought it for my niece, but Mira said it was inappropriate. Lauren slipped into the dress, pushed her boobs into the built-in bra. Angie zipped her up. Slowly, Lauren walked toward the full-length mirror that hung on the back of the closed door. She gasped. For the first time in her life, she looked like all the other girls at school. Chapter 11. Angie stood in front of her dresser. The top drawer was open. There, buried among the bras and panties and socks, was her camera. "To take photos of my grandbabies," Mama had said when she'd given Angie the camera. "Babies," that smile of Mama's said, "grow as naturally as green buds in springtime." Angie sighed. Hope had been so easy back then. For years, Angie had used this camera all the time, documenting every moment of her life. She was there, year after year, snapping pictures at family gatherings, birthday parties, baby showers, preschool graduations. Somewhere along the way, it had begun to cause her pain, this looking through the viewfinder at a life she wanted desperately but couldn't have. One by one, she'd stopped photographing her nieces and nephews. It simply hurt too much to see her loss in Technicolor. She knew it was selfish of her, and childish, too, but some lines couldn't be crossed. By the time little Danny had been born, only 5 years ago now, it felt like a lifetime, Angie had put the camera away for good. She wouldn't think about that now. She grabbed the camera, refilled the film, and went downstairs. Lauren stood at the fireplace, with her back to the flames. The golden glow wreathed her, gave her pale freckled skin a bronze sheen. The shell pink gown was a little too big on her and a little too long, but neither flaw was noticeable. With her hair coiled into a French twist and held back by the butterfly clip, she looked like a princess. "You look beautiful," Angie said, coming into the room. She was embarrassed by how much emotion she suddenly felt. It was a little thing. Helping a teenage girl get ready for a school dance? Nothing, really. So why did she feel so much?
"Wow, I look beautiful,"
Lauren said. There was wonder in her voice. Surprise. Angie needed the distance of a viewfinder suddenly. She started snapping photographs. She kept taking them, one after another, until Lauren laughed and said, "Wait, save some film for David." Angie felt like an idiot. "You're right. Have a seat. I'll get us tea while we wait." She went into the kitchen. "He said he'd be here at 7 o'clock. We're going to the club for dinner." In the kitchen, Angie made 2 cups of tea. "The club, huh? Pretty hoity-toity." Lauren giggled. She looked impossibly young just then, perched as she was on the very edge of the sofa. Obviously, she was afraid to wrinkle her gown. She sipped her tea with extreme care, holding the cup with two hands. Angie felt a surge of emotion. She was afraid of what the world could do to a girl like this, one who seemed sometimes to be too alone. "You're looking at me weird. Am I holding the cup wrong?" Lauren asked. "No." Angie quickly took another photograph. As she lowered the camera back to her lap, she met Lauren's starry-eyed gaze. How could a mother not want to experience this moment? "I guess you've gone to lots of school dances," she said. That was probably the answer. "Yeah, most of them." Lauren didn't seem to really be listening, though. Her voice sounded distracted. Finally, she set down her teacup and said, "Can I ask you something?" "Generally, that's a question one should say no to. Often hell no."
"Really? Can I?"
"Fire away." Angie leaned back into the sofa's denim pillows. Lauren looked at her then. "Why did you do all this for me tonight?" "I like you, Lauren. That's all. I wanted to help."
"I think it's because you feel sorry for me."
Angie sighed. She knew she couldn't deflect the question. Lauren wanted a real answer. That was part of it, maybe. "Mostly, though, I know how it feels not to get what you want."
"You?"
Angie swallowed hard. A part of her wished she hadn't opened this particular door, and yet it had felt so natural to speak, though now that she'd begun, she didn't know quite how to move forward. "I don't have children," she said.
"Why not?"
Angie actually appreciated the directness of the question. Women her own age tended to recognize the landmine in this conversation and walk gingerly around it. "The doctors don't know exactly. I've been pregnant 3 times, but..." She thought of Sophia and closed her eyes for a second, then went on. "No luck."
"So you liked helping me get ready?"
There was a wistfulness in Lauren's voice that matched Angie's own emotions. "I did," she answered softly. She was about to say something else when the doorbell rang. "It's David," Lauren said, popping to her feet, running for the door. "Stop!" Angie called out.
"What?"
"A lady is called when the date arrives. Go upstairs. I'll answer the door."
"Really?"
Lauren's voice was barely above a whisper. "Go." As soon as Lauren was upstairs, Angie went to the front door and opened it. David stood on the small porch. In a flawlessly cut black tuxedo with a white shirt and silver tie, he was every teenage girl's dream. "You must be David. I've seen you drive up to the restaurant. I'm Angie Malone." He shook her hand so hard she swore she felt the bones clamp together. "David Ryerson Haynes," he said, smiling nervously, looking past her. Angie stepped back, ushered him inside. "Of the Timber family?" "That's us. Is Lauren ready?" That explained the Porsche. She called out Lauren's name. Within a second, she appeared at the top of the stairs. David gasped.
"Whoa,"
he said softly, moving toward the stairs.
"You look awesome."
Lauren's mouth formed a trembling smile.
"You think so?"
He handed her a white wrist corsage, then kissed her. Even from across the room, Angie could see the gentleness of that kiss, and it made her smile. "Come on, you two," she said. "Photo op. Stand by the fireplace." Angie snapped several pictures. It took an act of will to stop. "Okay," she finally said. "Have fun. Drive safely." She wasn't even sure they heard her. Lauren and David were lost in each other's eyes. But at the front door, Lauren turned to Angie and threw her arms around her, holding on in a death grips hug.
"I'll never forget this," she whispered. "Thank you."
Angie whispered back,
"You're welcome."
But her throat was suddenly tight, and she wasn't sure if her words carried any sound or not. She stood there as David opened the car door for Lauren. In the amount of time it took to wave, they were gone. It didn't surprise Angie at all to realize that she was crying.
She backed into the house and closed the door. The silence seemed oppressive suddenly. She'd forgotten how quiet her life was. Lately, if she didn't turn on the television or the stereo, she would hear nothing except her own breathing or the patter of her own footsteps on the hardwood floor. She felt herself slipping down a slope she knew too well. At the bottom, it was lonely and cold. She didn't want to go down there again. It had taken so long to crawl out. She wished she could call Conlon right now. He'd once been so good at talking her down from the ledge. But those days were gone, too. The phone rang. Thank God. She ran to answer it. Hello? She was surprised at how ordinary her voice sounded. A drowning woman shouldn't speak in so certain a voice. How did the dance preparations go? It was Mama. Great! She looked beautiful. Angie made herself laugh, prayed it sounded more natural than it felt. Are you okay? She loved her mother for asking. I'm fine. I think I'll go to bed for a while. We'll talk in the morning, okay? I love you, Angela. Love you too, Mama. She was trembling when she hung up. She thought about doing a lot of things, putting in a movie, reading a book, working on the new menu. In the end, though, she was too tired for any of it. She crawled into her big king-size bed, pulled the covers up to her chin, and closed her eyes. Sometime later, she woke up. Someone was calling her name. She glanced at the clock. It wasn't even 8 o'clock. She crawled out of bed and stumbled down the stairs. Mama stood in the kitchen, her clothes dappled with raindrops, her red splattered apron still in place. She put her hands on her hips. You are not fine. I will be. I will be 90 someday. That doesn't mean getting there will be easy. Come. She took Angie by the hand and led her toward the sofa. They sat down, cuddled together the way they'd done when Angie was a girl. Mama stroked her hair. It was fun helping her get ready for the dance. It wasn't until later, after she'd left, that I started thinking about... I know, Mama said gently. Angie sighed. She knew that no matter how long she lived, this pain would sometimes feel fresh. Some losses ran deep, and time moved too slowly in a lifetime to heal them completely. I lost the sun once, Mama said into the silence that fell between them. Angie gasped, twisted around. You never told us that. Some things are too painful to speak of. He would have been my first. Why didn't you tell me? I couldn't. Angie felt her mother's pain. It connected them, that common loss, brought them to a place that felt like friendship. I wanted to say only hopeful things. I know. Angie stared down at her own hands. For a split second, she was surprised to see that her wedding ring was gone. Be careful with this girl, Angela, her mother said gently. It was the second time she'd been given this advice. Angie wondered if she could follow it. Sunshine on an autumn's morning was a gift from God himself, as rare as pink diamonds in this part of the world. Lauren took it as a sign. She stretched lazily, coming slowly awake. She could hear the hum of cars on the street. Next door, the neighbors were fighting. Somewhere, a car horn honked. In the bedroom down the hall, her mother was sleeping off a late-night bender. To the rest of the world, it was an ordinary Sunday morning. Lauren rolled onto her side. The old mattress that had been her bed for as long as she could remember squeaked at the movement. David lay sprawled on his back, his hair a tangled mess that obscured half of his face. One arm hung off the side of the bed, the other was angled across his head. She could see the red smattering of pimples that dotted his hairline and the tiny zigzag scar that traced his cheekbone. He'd gotten that in 6th grade, playing touch football. I bled like a stuck pig,
he always said when retelling the story. There was nothing he liked more than bragging about his injuries. She always teased him that he was a hypochondriac. She touched the scar, traced it with the tip of her finger. Last night had been perfect. Better than perfect. She'd felt like a princess. And when David led her out onto the stage, she'd practically floated along behind him. Aerosmith's Angel had been playing. She wondered how long she'd remember that. Would she tell their children the story? Come on, kids. Come listen to the story of the night Mommy was crowned homecoming queen. I love you, David had whispered, holding her hand as the tiara was placed on her head. She remembered looking at him then, seeing him through a blur of tears. She loved him so much it made her chest ache. She couldn't imagine being apart from him. If they went to different colleges, she squeezed her eyes shut. This was all it took, just the thought of different colleges, and she felt sick to her stomach. David came awake slowly. When he saw her, he smiled. I'll have to tell my folks I'm at Jared's more often. He pulled her into his arms. She fit perfectly against him. It was as if they'd been built for each other. This is what it would be like when they were at college together, and later when they were married. She would never feel alone again. She kissed him, touched him. My mom never wakes up till noon on Sunday, she said, smiling slowly. He drew back. My Uncle Peter is meeting me at home in an hour. I have an appointment with some bigwig from Stanford. She drew back. On Sunday? I thought, he's only in town for the weekend. You can come along. Her smile faded, along with her romantic hopes for the day. It pissed her off that he hadn't figured that out. Yeah, right. And if he'd really wanted her to come along, he would have asked her before now. Don't be that way. Come on, David. Quit dreaming. I'm not going to get a scholarship at Stanford, and I don't have Mommy and Daddy to write a check. You, however, could get into USC. It was an old discussion. His heavy sigh showed that he was tired of it. First of all, you can get into Stanford. Second of all, if you're at USC, we'll see each other plenty. We love each other, Lauren. It doesn't go away because of a few miles. A few hundred miles. She stared up at the tattered acoustical tile ceiling. A water stain blossomed across one corner. She wished she could smile. I have to work today anyway. He pulled her closer, gave her one of those slow kisses that made her heart beat faster. She felt her anger dissolve. I'm sorry, she whispered, clinging to him now. When he finally released her and got out of bed, she felt cold. He gathered up the tux and redressed. She sat up in bed, with the blankets pulled across her bare breasts. I had a great time last night. He walked around the bed and sat down beside her. You worry too much. Look around you, David. She heard the throatiness of her voice. With anyone else, it would have been embarrassing. I've always had to worry. Not about me. I love you. I know that. And she did. She believed it with every cell in her body. She clung to him, kissed him. Good luck. After he'd gone, Lauren sat there a long time, alone, staring at the open door. Finally, she got out of bed and took a hot shower, then dressed and walked down the hallway. She stopped at her mother's bedroom door. She could hear snoring coming from inside. A familiar longing filled her. She touched the door, wondering if her mother had even thought about the dance last night. Ask her. Sometimes, in the early morning, when the sunlight slanted just so through the dusty blinds, Mom woke up almost happy. Maybe this would be one of those days. Lauren needed it to be. She knocked quietly and opened the door. Mom? Her mother lay in bed, sprawled across the top of the blankets. In a flimsy old t-shirt, she looked spindly and too thin. She wasn't eating enough lately.
Lauren paused. It was one of those rare moments when she remembered how young her mother was. Mom? She sat down on the edge of the bed. Mom rolled onto her back. Without opening her eyes, she murmured,
What time is it?
Not even 9. She wanted to push the hair out of her mother's eyes, but she didn't dare. It was the kind of intimacy that could ruin everything. Mom rubbed her eyes.
I feel like shit. Phoebe and I partied pretty hard last night.
She grinned sleepily.
No surprise there.
Lauren leaned forward. I'm the homecoming queen, she said quietly, still not quite believing it. She couldn't contain her smile.
Huh?
Mom's eyes slid shut again. The dance? It was last night, Lauren said, but already she knew she'd lost her mother's attention. Never mind.
I think I'll call in sick today. I feel like shit.
Mom rolled over again. Within seconds, she was snoring again. Lauren refused to be disappointed. It had been stupid to expect anything else. Some lessons should have been learned a long time ago. With a sigh, she got to her feet. An hour later, Lauren was on the bus, heading through town. It was still early on this Sunday morning. Few cars were parked in the angled slots, but the church lots were full. It reminded her of a time, not so long ago, really, when she used to open her bedroom window on the Sabbath, rain or snow. The weather didn't matter. She used to lean out the window and listen to those pealing bells. She'd close her eyes and imagine how it must feel to get dressed up on Sunday and go to church. In her fantasies, she always walked up to the double doors with her small pink hand tucked tenderly into her mother's hand. On lucky days, she could actually see her, a woman with curly blonde hair, wearing a crisp blue dress and carrying a patent leather purse. A small freckle-faced girl with hair the color of a brand new penny hurried along beside her. The girl wore a red dress Lauren had once seen in the window at JCPenney, tomato red with white daisies. Come along, Lauren, her imaginary mother always said, smiling gently. We don't want to be late. Lauren hadn't opened that window of hers in a long time. Now, when she looked out, all she saw was the broken-down building next door and Mrs. Sanchez's dented blue El Camino. The bus slowed down, began to ease toward the stop. Lauren looked down at the shopping bag in her lap. She should have called first. That was how it was done in polite homes. You didn't just stop by, even to return something. Unfortunately, she didn't know the cabin's number, and, if she were honest with herself at least, she needed not to be alone. Miracle Mile Road, the bus driver called out. Lauren lurched to her feet and hurried down the aisle, trying not to knock into anyone, then went down the narrow steps and exited the bus. The doors wheezed shut behind her, clanged. The bus drove on. She stood there, clutching the bag to her chest, trying to protect it from the rain that fell like bits of icy glass. The road stretched out in front of her, bordered on either side by towering cedar trees whose tips reached toward the gray underbelly of clouds. Here and there, mailboxes dotted the roadside, but other than that, there were no signs of life. This was the time of year that belonged to the forest itself. A dank, dark few weeks in which the few hikers who dared to venture into this green and black wilderness could be lost until spring. By the time she reached the driveway, it was raining in earnest. Fast, cold razor cuts hit her cheeks. The house looked empty. No light came through the windows. Rain played a thumping beat on the roof, splashed in the puddles. Fortunately, Angie's car was in the carport. She went to the door and knocked. There was noise coming from inside. Music. She knocked again. With every minute that passed, she lost a little more feeling in her hands. It was freezing out here. After one last knock, she reached for the doorknob. To her surprise, the knob turned easily. She opened the door. Hello? She stepped inside, closed the door behind her. There were no lights on. Without sunshine, the room looked a little gloomy. She noticed a purse on the kitchen counter. A pile of car keys lay beside it on the white formica.
Angie?
Lauren took off her shoes and socks and set the bag on the counter beside the purse. She walked toward the living room, calling out Angie's name as she went. The house was empty.
Damn it, Lauren muttered. Now she'd have to walk all the way back to the bus stop and stand there in the freezing rain. She had no idea how often the number 9 bus stopped at that corner.
Oh, well.
As long as she was here, she might as well return the dress to its proper place. She went upstairs. The steps creaked beneath her weight. She looked back and saw the wet footprints trailing behind her. Great, now she'd have to clean the floor on her way out. She stopped at the closed bedroom door and knocked, just in case, although there was no way Angie was still sleeping at 10:30 in the morning. She opened the door. The room was dark. Heavy floral print drapery blocked out the meager gray sunlight. Lauren felt around for a light switch, found it, and flicked it up. Light burst from the overhead fixture. She hurried toward the closet and put the dress away, then stepped back into the bedroom. Angie was sitting up in bed, frowning at her in a bleary-eyed, confused way.
Lauren? Embarrassment rooted her to the spot. Her cheeks burned.
I'm sorry. I knocked. I thought...
Angie gave her a tired smile. Her eyes were swollen and rimmed in red as if she'd been crying. Tiny pink lines crisscrossed the upper ridge of her cheeks. Her long dark hair was a mess. All in all, she didn't look good.
It's fine, kiddo.
I should leave.
No! Angie tried to smile. Then more softly, she added,
I'd like it if you stayed.
She lifted her chin to indicate the foot of the huge four-postered bed.
Sit.
I'm all wet.
Angie shrugged.
Wet dries.
Lauren looked down at her bare, wet feet. The skin was almost scarlet-colored. The blue veins seemed pronounced. She climbed up onto the bed, stretched her legs out, and leaned against the footboard. Angie tossed her a huge chenille pillow, then tucked an unbelievably soft blanket around her feet.
Tell me about last night.
The question released something in Lauren. For the first time all day, her chest didn't ache. She wanted to launch into every romantic detail, but something stopped her. It was the sadness in Angie's eyes.
You've been crying, Lauren said matter-of-factly.
I'm old. This is how I look in the morning.
First of all, it's 10:30, practically afternoon. Secondly, I know about crying in your sleep.
Angie dropped her head back against the headboard and stared up at the white, tongue-and-groove planked ceiling. It was a while before she spoke.
Sometimes I have bad days. Not often, but, you know, sometimes.
She sighed again, then looked at Lauren.
Sometimes your life just doesn't turn out the way you dreamed it would.
You're too young to know about that.
It doesn't matter anyway.
You think I'm too young to understand disappointment?
Angie looked at her for a long, quiet moment, then said,
No, I don't. But some things aren't helped by talking. So, tell me about the dance. I've been dying for details.
Lauren wished she knew Angie better. If she did, she'd know whether to drop the subject or keep it up. What mattered was saying the right thing to this sad, wonderful woman.
Please, Angie said.
The dance was wonderful, Lauren finally said. Everyone said I looked perfect.
You did, Angie said, smiling now. It was the real thing, too, not that fake, I'm okay smile of before.
It made Lauren feel good, as if she'd given Angie something. The decorations were cool, too. The theme was Winter Wonderland, and there was fake snow everywhere, and mirrors that looked like frozen ponds. Oh, and Brad Gagany brought this fifth of rum. It was gone in like a minute.
Angie frowned. Oh, good.
Lauren wished she hadn't revealed that. She'd gotten wrapped up in the pseudo-girlfriend moment. She'd forgotten she was speaking to an adult. Truthfully, she didn't have enough experience with it. She never talked to her mom about school events. "I hardly drank at all," she lied quickly.
"I'm glad to hear that.
Drinking can make a girl do things she shouldn't." Lauren heard the gentleness of Angie's advice. She couldn't help thinking about her own mother and how she would have launched right now into her own regrets, chief among them being motherhood. Lauren couldn't help wishing that her mother were more like Angie. And guess what? Lauren couldn't wait for Angie to guess. She said, "I was homecoming queen." Angie smiled and clapped her hands. "That is so cool! Start talking, Missy. I want to know everything." For the next hour, they talked about the dance. By 11:30, when it was time to go to the restaurant, Angie was laughing again. Chapter 12. The phones had been ringing off the hook all day. It was the third Sunday in October, and in the tiny West End Gazette, a full-page ad had run on the back page of the so-called entertainment section. Rediscover romance at DeSaria's. The ad had detailed the changes. Date night, wine night, happy hour, and included a number of coupons. 50% off a bottle of wine. Free dessert with purchase of an entree. A 2-for-1 lunch special, Tuesday through Thursday. People who had forgotten all about DeSaria's were reminded of times gone by, of nights when they'd gone with their parents to the tiny trattoria on Driftwood Way. Most of them, it seemed, picked up the phone to make a reservation. For the first time in as many years as anyone could remember, they were booked solid for a Tuesday night. The coat donation box was full, almost to overflowing. Everyone, it seemed, wanted to take this opportunity to help their neighbors. "I do not understand," Mama said as she washed the ahi steaks and laid them out on the waxed paper. "There is no way to know how many people will want fish tonight. It's a bad idea, Angela. Too expensive. We should make more cannelloni and lasagna." She'd said the same thing at least 5 times in the last hour. Angie shot a wink to Mira, who was trying not to giggle. "If there were a nuclear war, we'd have enough lasagna in the freezer for the whole town, Mama." "Do not make fun of war, Angela. Chop the parsley finer, Mira. We do not want our guests to speak with a tree stuck between their front teeth. Smaller!" Mira laughed and kept chopping the parsley. Mama set out the parchment paper with exquisite care, then brushed olive oil on the surface. "Mira, hand me the shallots." The kitchen door banged open. Lauren ran in. "We have 10 people so far!" "I'll be right back." Angie pushed away from the counter and went out to the restaurant. 5:15, and already they were more than half full. Rosa and Lauren were busy taking orders and pouring water for the guests. Angie went from table to table, greeting people in the way she remembered her father doing. He'd always snap to attention at every table, straightening napkins, pulling out chairs for the ladies, calling out for more water. She saw people she hadn't seen for years, and each person seemed to have a story to share about her father. She'd forgotten, in the focus of her own family's loss, how big a hole his absence had left in the community. When she was certain that every table was being handled well, she went back into the kitchen. Mama was a wreck, a whirling dervish of nerves. 8 fish specials already, and I ruined the first batch. It cooked so fast, the parchment exploded. Mira was standing off to the side chopping tomatoes. Clearly she was trying to stay invisible. Angie went to her mother, touched her shoulder. "Take a deep breath, Mama." Her mother stopped, puffed her chest out in a heaving sigh, then caved inward. "I am old," she muttered. "Too old for..." The door banged open. Livy stood there, dressed in a knee-length, pleated black skirt, a white blouse, and black boots. "Well, is it true? Did Mama change the menu?" "Who called you?" Mira asked, wiping her hands on her apron. "Mr. Tannen from the hardware store came into the cleaners. He'd heard it from Mr. Garcia, who works at the printers." Mama studiously ignored her daughters. Bending forward, she seasoned the fish steaks with salt and pepper, dotted the tops with fresh thyme and parsley, and chopped cherry tomatoes. Then she sealed each parchment package and set them on cookie sheets, which she placed in the oven.
It's true, Livy whispered. What is it?
Tonno al cartoccio, Mama said with a sniff. It's not a big deal. Over there I have halibut. I'm making your papa's favorite, rombo alle capperi e pomodoro. The tomatoes were very good this week.
The oven beeper went off. Mama pulled the cookie sheet from the oven and dished up the plates. Tonight's ahi special was served with marinated roasted bell peppers, grilled zucchini, and homemade polenta.
What are you all staring at?
Just then, Lauren and Rosa came into the kitchen. Mama handed them plates. When the waitresses left, Mama said airily,
I've been thinking about changing the menu for years. Change is a good thing. Your papa, God rest his soul, always said I could do anything with the menu except take off the lasagna.
She made a shooshing gesture with her hands.
Now quit standing around like log bumps and go out there. Lauren could use your help. Mira, go get more tomatoes.
When Livy and Mira left, Mama laughed. Come here, she said to Angie, opening her arms.
Your papa, she whispered. He would be so proud of you.
Angie held her tightly. He'd be proud of us. Late that night, when the final burst of guests had been served and their dinner plates cleared away to make room for rich bowls full of zabaglione with fresh raspberries and tiramisu, Mama came out of the kitchen to see how her food had been received. The guests, most of whom had known Maria for years, clapped at her arrival. Mr. Fortense yelled out,
Fabulous food!
Mama smiled.
Thank you. And come back soon. Tomorrow I make asparagus potato gnocchi with fresh tomatoes. It will make you weep.
She looked at Angie.
It is my brilliant baby daughter's favorite dish.
When the last customers finally left at 10:30, Lauren was exhausted. The tables had been full all night. A couple of times there had been lines at the door even. Poor Rosa couldn't possibly keep up. For the first hour or so, Lauren had been going so fast she felt nervous and queasy. Then Angie's sister had shown up. Like an angel, Livy swept in on a cloud of laughter and eased Lauren's burden. Now, Lauren stood by the reservation desk. Rosa had gone home at least an hour ago, and the women were all in the kitchen. For the first time all night, she could draw a relaxed breath. She pulled her tip money out of her apron pocket and counted it. Twice. She'd earned $61 tonight. Suddenly, it didn't matter that her feet hurt, her hands ached, and she had cramps. She was rich! A few more nights like this and she'd have all her application money. She took off her apron and headed for the kitchen. She was halfway there when the swinging door burst open. Livy walked out first. Mira was right behind her. Though they looked nothing alike, there was no doubt they were sisters. Their gestures mirrored each other. They both had the same husky laugh as Angie. From another room, it was hard to tell their voices apart. A sound clicked through the restaurant. The rich, velvety voice of Frank Sinatra snapped off. Mira and Livy stopped in tandem, cocked their heads. Another song started. Loud. The sound of it was so unexpected, it took Lauren a second to recognize. Bruce Springsteen. Glory Days. I had a friend, was a big baseball player, back in high school. Livy let out a whoop and pushed her hands high in the air. She immediately started to dance with Mira, who moved awkwardly, as if she were getting electroshock treatments.
I haven't danced since... Geez, I can't remember the last time I danced, Mira yelled to her sister over the music.
Livy laughed.
That's obvious, big sister. You look like Elaine in that Seinfeld episode. You gotta get out more.
Mira bumped her sister hip to hip. Lauren watched in awe. These two sisters, who had barely spoken all night, We're like different people now. Younger. Freer. Connected. The door burst open again. Angie came dancing out, with her mother behind her, holding her. "Conga line!" someone yelled out. Livy and Mira fell in behind, holding on to one another. The four of them danced around the empty tables, pausing now and then to kick out their heels or throw back their heads. It was incredibly dorky, like something off some old people's TV show, and heartbreakingly cool. Lauren's stomach tightened. She didn't know how to react. All she knew was that she didn't belong here. She was an employee. This was family. She started to back away, edged toward the door. "Oh, no, you don't!" Angie cried out. Lauren stopped in her tracks, looked up. The conga line had broken up. Mira and Livy were dancing together. Maria stood in the corner, watching her daughters with a smile. Angie rushed toward Lauren. "You can't leave yet. It's a party." "I don't..." Angie grabbed her hand, grinned at her. The word belong was lost. The music changed. Crocodile Rock blared through the speakers. "Elton!" Livy yelled. "We saw him at the Tacoma Dome, remember?" And the dancing started again. "Dance," Angie said. And before Lauren knew it, she was in the middle of the crowd of women, dancing. By the third song, Billy Joel's Uptown Girl, Lauren was laughing as loudly as the rest of them. For the next half hour or so, she was enfolded in the warm raucousness of a loving family. They laughed, they danced, they talked endlessly about how busy the restaurant had been. Lauren loved every minute of it. And when the party broke up, near midnight, she honestly hated to go home. But there was no choice, of course. She offered to take the bus, an offer that was rejected almost instantly. Angie ushered her out to the car. They talked all the way and laughed often, but finally Lauren was home. She trudged up the gloomy stairs toward her apartment, shifting her heavy backpack from one tired shoulder to the other. The door to the apartment was open. Inside, gray smoke hung in strands along the stained acoustical tile ceiling. Cigarette butts lay heaped in ashtrays on the coffee table and scattered here and there across the floor. An empty bottle of gin rolled slowly back and forth on the wobbly dining table, finally clunking onto the linoleum floor. Lauren recognized the signs, two kinds of butts and beer bottles on the kitchen counter. It didn't take a forensic team to analyze the crime scene. It was familiar territory. Mom had picked up some loser. They were all losers, from the tavern and brought him home. They were in her mother's bedroom now. She recognized the thumping rhythm of her mother's old Hollywood bed frame. Clang, clang, thump, clang, clang, thump. She hurried into her bedroom and closed the door. Moving quietly, not wanting anyone to know she was home, she grabbed her day planner and flipped it open. On today's date, she wrote, "Desaria Party." She didn't ever want to forget it. She wanted to be able to look down at those two words and remember how tonight had felt. She hurried to the bathroom and got ready for bed in record speed. The last thing she wanted was to bump into him in the hallway. She ran back to her room and slammed the door shut. Crawling into bed, she pulled the covers to her chin and stared up at the ceiling. Memories of tonight filled her mind. A strange emotion came with the images. Part happiness, part loss. She couldn't untangle it. It was just a restaurant, she reminded herself, a place of employment. Angie was her boss, not her mother. There it was, the truth of the matter, the pea under her mattress. She'd felt alone for so long, and now, irrationally, she felt as if she almost belonged somewhere. Even if it was a lie, which it certainly was, it felt better than the cold emptiness that was the truth. She tried to stop thinking about it, to stop playing and replaying their conversations in her mind, but she couldn't let it go. At the end of the night, when they were all crowded around the fireplace, talking and laughing, Lauren had loosened up enough to tell the one joke she knew. Mira and Angie had laughed long and hard. Maria had said, "This make no sense. Why would the man say such a thing?" The question had made them all laugh harder, and Lauren most of all. Remembering it made her want to cry. Chapter 13. October rushed past, but in November, life seemed to move slowly again. One day bled into the next. It rained constantly, sometimes in howling, sheeting storms that turned the ocean into a whirlpool of sound and fury. More often than not, though, the moisture fell in beaded drops from a bloated, tired-looking sky. For the past 2 weeks, Lauren had been home as little as possible. That man was always there, drinking beer and smoking cigarettes and stinking up the air with his loserdom. Of course, Mom was in love with him. He was precisely her type. Lauren made a point of working at the restaurant almost every night and all day weekends. Even though they'd hired another waitress, Lauren tried to keep her hours steady. When she wasn't working, she was at the school library or hanging out with David. The only downside to earning all this money and improving her already stellar grades was that she was exhausted. Right now, it was taking every scrap of her determination to stay awake in class. In the front of the room, Mr. Goldman was waxing poetic about the way Jackson Pollock used color. To Lauren, the painting looked like something an angry child would make if handed a box of paints. Electives. That was practically all she was taking this year. She hadn't realized earlier, when she'd poured the heat on her accelerated studies, that by her senior year she'd have almost all of her requirements out of the way. As it was, she could technically graduate at the end of this semester. Trigonometry was the only class she had that mattered, and it wasn't even required for graduation. When the bell rang, she slapped her book shut and shot out of her seat, moving into the laughing, shoving, talking crowd of students around her. At the flagpole, she found David playing hacky sack with the guys. When he saw her, his face lit up. He reached for her, pulled her into his arms, and for the first time all day, she wasn't tired. "I'm starving," someone said. "Me too." Lauren looped an arm around David as he followed the crowd down the street to the Hamburger Haven that was their regular hangout. Marcy Morford dropped some money into the jukebox. Afro Man's crazy rap immediately started to play. Everyone groaned and then laughed. Anna Lyons launched into a story about Mrs. Fiore, the home economics teacher, which got everyone arguing about how sucky it was to have to do actual homework in a skate class. Lauren ordered a strawberry milkshake, a bacon burger, and fries. It felt good to have money in her pocket. For years, she'd pretended never to be hungry. Now she ate all the time. "Geez, Lo," Irene Herman laughed. "Way to pack it down. Do you have a buck I can borrow?" "No problem." Lauren pulled a few dollars out of her jeans and handed it to her friend. "I know you want a milkshake, too." That got everyone talking about how much they could eat. "Hey," Kim said after a while, "did you guys get the notice about the California schools?" Lauren looked up. "What notice?" "They're having a big thing in Portland this weekend." Portland, an hour and a half away. Lauren's heartbeat picked up. "That's cool." She slipped her hand into David's, squeezing gently. "We can go together," she said, looking at him. David looked crestfallen. "I'm going to my grandma's this weekend," he said. "In Indiana. There's no way I can cancel. It's their anniversary party." He looked around the table. "Can one of you guys give Lauren a ride?" One by one, they all made their excuses. Crap. Now she'd have to ride the bus. And as if that weren't bad enough, she'd have to go to yet another college fair as the only kid without a parent. When the food was gone, the crowd drifted away, leaving Lauren and David alone at the table. "Can you get there by yourself?" "Maybe I could fake a cold." "No. If I had grandparents, I'd love to go visiting." She felt a tiny sting at the confession. How often had she dreamed of going to Grandma's or meeting a cousin? She would have done almost anything to meet an honest-to-God relative. I'll bet Angie would take you. She seemed pretty cool. Lauren thought about that. Was it possible? Could she ask Angie for that big a favor? Yeah, she said, just so David wouldn't worry. I'll ask her. David's remark stayed with Lauren all the rest of that day and into the next. She was unused to having someone of whom she could ask a favor. It would make her look vaguely pathetic, she knew, might even prompt questions about her mother. Normally, that would be reason enough to just forget the whole thing and take the bus. But Angie was different. She really seemed to care. By the end of the week, Lauren still hadn't made up her mind. On Friday, she worked hard, moving quickly from table to table, keeping the customers happy. Whenever she could, she caught a glimpse of Angie, tried to gauge how a request would be received. But Angie was a butterfly all night, flitting from place to place, talking to each patron. Twice Lauren had started to ask the question, but on both times she'd lost her nerve and turned away abruptly. Okay, Angie said as she was closing up the register for the night. Spill the beans, kiddo. Lauren was filling the salt shakers. At the question, she flinched. Salt went flying across the table. That's bad luck, Angie said. Throw some salt over your left shoulder, quick. Lauren pinched some salt between her thumb and forefinger and tossed it over her shoulder. Phew, that was close. We could have been struck by lightning. Now, what's on your mind? Mind? That space between your ears? You've been staring at me all night, following me around. I know you, Lauren. You have something you want to say. You need Saturday night off? The new waitress is working out. I could spare you if you and David have a date. This was it. Now or never. Lauren went back to her backpack and pulled out a flyer, which she handed to Angie. California schools. Question and answer session. Meet with representatives. Angie looked up. They didn't have any of this cool stuff when I was a kid. So you want Saturday off so you can go? I want to go. Could you give me a ride? Lauren said in a rush. Angie frowned at her. This had been a bad idea. Angie was giving her that poor Lauren so pathetic look. Never mind, I'll just take the day off, okay? She reached down for her backpack. I like Portland, Angie said. Lauren looked up. You do? Sure. You'll take me? Lauren said, almost afraid to believe it. Of course I'll take you. And Lauren, don't be such a chicken next time. We're friends. Doing favors for each other comes with the territory. Lauren was embarrassed by how much that meant to her. Sure, Angie. Friends. The traffic from Vancouver to Portland was stop and go. It wasn't until they were halfway across the bridge that connected Washington to Oregon that they realized why. This afternoon was the big UW-UO football game. The Huskies versus the Ducks, a rivalry that had gone on for years. We're going to be late, Angie said for at least the third time in the last 20 minutes. It was alarming how angry that made her. She'd undertaken the obligation to get Lauren to the appointment on time, and now they were going to be late. Don't worry about it, Angie. So we miss a few minutes. It's hardly a trauma. Angie flicked on the turn signal and veered left onto their exit. Finally. Once they were on the surface streets, the traffic eased. She zipped down one street and up the other, then pulled into an empty parking stall. We're here. She looked at the dashboard clock. Only 7 minutes late. Let's run. They raced across the parking lot and into the building. The place was packed. Damn. Angie started to walk down to the front. They could sit on the step if nothing else. Lauren grabbed her hand, led her to a seat in the back row. On stage, there were about 15 people seated behind a long conference table. A moderator was facilitating a discussion of entrance requirements, school selectivity, in-state to out-of-state student ratios. Lauren wrote down every word in her day planner. Angie felt a strange sort of pride. If she'd had a daughter, she would have wanted her to be just like Lauren. Smart, ambitious, dedicated. For the next hour, Angie listened to one statistic after the other. By the end of the presentation, she knew one thing for sure. She wouldn't have been accepted to UCLA these days. In her day, you'd needed to be breathing without a respirator and have a 3.0 grade point average. Now, to get into Stanford, you better have cured some disease or won the National Science Fair. Unless, of course, you were good at throwing leather balls. Then you needed a solid 1.7 grade point. Lauren closed her notebook.
That's it, she said.
All around them, people were rising, moving toward the exit aisles. The combined conversation was a loud roar in the room.
So, what'd you find out? Angie asked, staying in her seat. There was no point merging into the ambulatory traffic.
That in the public schools, almost 90% of the students come from in-state, and tuition is on its way up.
Well, you're definitely having one of those the glass is half empty moments.
That's not like you.
Lauren sighed. It's tough sometimes, going to Faircrest Academy. All my friends are picking the schools they like. I have to figure out how to get the schools to like me.
It sounds like the essay is a big part of that.
Yeah.
And recommendations.
Yeah. Too bad I can't get like Jerry Brown or Arnold Schwarzenegger. As it is, I hope Mr. Baxter, my math teacher, can rock their socks off. Unfortunately, he forgets where the blackboard is half the time.
Angie glanced down at the stage. The folks from Loyola Marymount, USC, and Santa Clara were still there. They were sitting at the tables, talking to one another.
What's your first choice? She asked Lauren.
USC, I guess. It's David's second choice school.
I am not even going to get into the conversation about following your boyfriend to school.
Okay, I lied. It's a bad idea. Don't follow your boyfriend to college. Now, come on.
She stood up. Lauren put her day planner in her backpack and got up.
Where are you going? She asked when Angie headed downstairs instead of up.
She grabbed Lauren's hand. We did not drive all this way to be in the peanut gallery.
Lauren tried to draw back, but Angie was a freight train. She went down the stairs, around the orchestra pit, and onto the stage. Dragging Lauren behind her, she marched up to the man from USC.
He looked up, smiled tiredly. No doubt he was used to mothers hauling their children on stage. There was no way for him to know that Angie wasn't a mom.
Hello? How can I help you?
I'm Angela Malone, she said, offering her hand. When he shook it, she said, I'm a UCLA girl myself, but Lauren here has her heart set on SC. I can't imagine why.
The man laughed. That's a new approach. Knocking my school.
He looked at Lauren. And who are you?
She blushed deeply. Lauren Ribido, Faircrest Academy.
Ah, good school. That helps.
He smiled at her.
Don't be nervous. Why SC?
Journalism.
Angie hadn't known that. She smiled, feeling like a proud parent.
Think you're the next Woodward or Bernstein, huh? The man said. How are your grades?
Top 6% of the class. About 3.92 with lots of honors classes.
SAT?
Last year I got a 1520. I took it again, though. Those scores aren't in.
1520 is impressive enough. You do sports and volunteer in your community?
Yes.
And she works 20 to 25 hours a week, Angie put in.
Impressive.
Angie made her move.
Do you know William Layton?
The dean of the business school?
Sure.
He's from around here, isn't he?
Angie nodded. I went to school with his daughter.
What if he wrote her a recommendation?
The man looked at Lauren, then pulled a small brass carrier out of his back pocket.
Here's my card. You send your app to me personally. I'll shepherd it through.
To Angie, he said, a recommendation from Layton would really help.
Lauren still couldn't believe it. She kept breaking into laughter for no reason. Somewhere around Kelso, Angie had asked her to please stop saying thank you. But how could she? For the first time in her life, she'd been treated like someone. She had a chance at USC. A chance. She looked at Angie. Thanks. I mean it, she said again, bouncing in her seat. I know, Angie laughed. You act like this is the first time anyone's ever done you a favor. It was nothing.
Oh, it was something, she said, feeling her smile fade. It meant so much to her what Angie had done. For once, Lauren hadn't been on her own.
Chapter 14. The high school campus was buzzing with talk today. It was the third week of November, and the college admission application process was in high gear. Everyone was obsessed with college. It was in every conversation. Lauren had filled out all of her financial aid and scholarship paperwork, gotten all of her transcripts together, and written all of her essays. And miracle of miracles, Angie had gotten her a recommendation from Dr. Layton at USC. She was beginning to believe she had a real shot at a scholarship.
Did you hear about Andrew Wanamaker? His grandpa got him into Yale. Early decisions aren't even out yet, and he knows.
Kim Heltney leaned back against a tree, sighing.
If I don't get into Swarthmore, my dad will crap.
He doesn't care that I hate snow. They were all sitting in the quad, eating lunch, the gang who'd been best friends since freshman year.
I'd kill for Swarthmore, Jared said, rubbing Kim's back.
I'm supposed to go to Stone Hill, another private Catholic school. I'm afraid I'll go postal.
Lauren lay back, rested her head in David's lap. For once, the sun was shining and the grass was thick and dry. Even though it was cold out, the sun warmed her cheeks.
It's Mom's alma mater for me, Susan said. Yippee! William and Mary, here I come. This high school is bigger than the college.
How's it going for you, Lauren? Any word on scholarships? Kim asked.
Lauren shrugged. I keep filling out the paperwork. One more Why I Deserve It essay and I might scream.
She'll get a full ride, David said. Hell, she's the smartest kid in the school.
Lauren heard the pride in David's voice as he said it. Normally, that would have made her smile. But now, as she stared up at his chin, all she could think about was their future. He'd applied to Stanford, and it was a foregone conclusion that he'd be accepted. The thought of being separated from him chilled her more than the November weather, and he didn't seem to worry about it at all. He was sure of their love. How did a person come by that kind of certainty?
Kim opened her pop. It snapped and hissed. I can't wait to be done with all this application crap.
Lauren closed her eyes. The conversation swirled around her, but she didn't join in. She wasn't sure why, but suddenly she was on edge. Maybe it was the weather, cold and clear. Storms followed days like this, when the sky was scrubbed clean by clouds that raced from west to east. Or maybe it was the college talk. All she knew was that something was not right. A fine silver mist clung to the morning wet grass. Angie sat on the back porch, drinking her coffee and staring out to sea. The rhythmic wash, wash of the waves seemed as familiar and constant as the beating of her own heart. Here was the soundtrack of her youth, the rumbling roar of the tides, the sound of raindrops hitting rhododendron leaves, the creaking whine of a rocking chair on the weathered porch floor. The only thing missing was the sound of voices, children yelling at one another, giggling. She turned to say something to her husband, realizing a second too late that she was alone. She got up slowly, went back inside for more coffee. She was just reaching for the pot when there was a knock on the door.
Coming!
She went to the door, answered it. Her mother stood on the porch, wearing an ankle-length flannel nightgown and green rubber gardening clogs.
He wants me to go.
Angie frowned, shook her head. It looked as if Mama had been crying.
Come in out of the rain, Mama.
She put an arm around her mother, led her to a place on the sofa.
Now, what's going on?
Mama reached into her pocket, pulled out a rumpled white envelope.
He wants me to go.
Who? Angie took the envelope.
Papa!
And opened it. Inside were two tickets to Phantom of the Opera. Mama and Papa had always had seats at